Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. And as always, I'm so excited for our time together. Let's begin our session with a short period of turning within, of quiet stillness. So allowing our mind to just turn from without to within, to that space within each one of us where the Holy Spirit abides. And imagining that we are giving our willingness to Spirit, we're laying it on the altar. And this is our willingness to release everything, our willingness to experience miracles, our willingness to awaken to who it is that we really are. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. So taking a nice, mindful, and deep breath in and out. And just trusting that whatever we need to receive tonight, we will receive, whether we understand the reading or not. It doesn't matter to our thinking mind. It goes in, even if it's a deeper place beneath that thinking mind. So coming together to our perception of right here, right now. And we are picking up where we left off last week. If you have the CE, the Complete and Annotated Edition, please go to page 908 and paragraph number 5. If you have the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition, it is chapter 31, part 4, paragraph 5. It begins with the sentence, "Who would be willing to be turned away?" That corresponds to the Sparkle Edition, page 711. It's the second to last sentence on the page. And in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it's chapter 31, part 4, paragraph number 37. Excellent. So we've been reading this section called The Real Alternative. And basically, just to really briefly recap what we talked about or what we read last week, this section is saying that, you know, we tend to think that there's going to be some road, some pathway in the world that's going to lead to our happiness, to our salvation, and it absolutely positively cannot be found here. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I'll leave it at that because I think that that has been sort of the crux so far. So here we go. I'm starting again with the sentence, "Who would be willing to be turned away?" Who would be willing to be turned away from all the roadways of the world unless he understood their real futility? Is it not needful that he should begin with this to seek another way instead? For while he sees a choice where there is none, what power of decision can he use? The great release of power must begin with learning where it really has a use. And what decision has power if it be applied in situations without choice? So just to kind of bring in a little bit of what we read last week, in this first sentence, who would be willing to be turned away from all the roadways of the world unless he understood their real futility? In the reading from last week, it talked about how every pathway is a futile search, and that some, it says, some men have died on seeing this because they saw no way except the pathways offered by the world. So for people who have seen the futility of the world and stopped there, the Course says they lost their hope because they realized all those pathways have led nowhere. But we're asked to go beyond this. We're asked to go to this point and beyond it, as it said in the reading from last week. So here, this first sentence of this paragraph we just read, who would be willing to be turned away from all the roadways of the world unless he understood their real futility? We want to begin with this. We want to begin with saying every single thing here, every single pathway is futile. Let's seek another way instead. It's that famous line, there's got to be another way. We all have come to this point or we would not be here on this call. While we see a choice where there is none, so while we think, again, some road of the world is going to lead to our happiness or to our salvation, we don't really make a decision. We're not really making a decision. There's no power in these decisions because we're trying to find salvation in a situation that, again, is just never going to be. I want to read the next paragraph. I feel moved to just keep going, because that was kind of a short paragraph. The learning that the world can offer but one choice, no matter what its form may be, is the beginning of acceptance that there is a real alternative instead. To fight against this step is to defeat your purpose here. You did not come to learn to find a road the world does not contain. The search for different pathways in the world is but the search for different forms of truth. And this would keep the truth from being reached. So again, if we're looking for different pathways in the world, we're looking for different forms of truth. We're hoping if this one thing didn't work out, well, maybe we can find it there. And again, they all, I feel like this is going to be a lot of a similar idea as we read up the rest of this section, because it's really stressing that all roads of the world are leading to nowhere. If that sounds depressing, remember that repurposed, whatever it is that we are called to do, whatever pathway it is that we're called to walk down, whatever situation we might be called to get involved in the world, we're now doing it from a different place. We're not doing it of our small selves, that if I think, you know, that I can fix something out there in the world, that then I'll be happy. When we're guided, when we are prompted to do these things, there is a divine purpose and a divine guide very much, you know, directing the situation, and it is our job as miracle workers to listen, learn, and do. I love how Jesus says in that quote, listen, learn, and do. You know, the first two are not enough. The third step, doing, he says, real members of my party are active miracle workers. And I just love that. So this isn't saying just sit back and don't do anything because this is all futile. This is saying that it's all futile when you're doing this with the ego. When you are listening and being prompted and you are recognizing that there's something beyond your thought system that is there for us to follow in our journey of waking up, everything gets repurposed. It all becomes a beautiful encounter with the truth, as the Course says. So I'll pause here for a moment. Anybody have anything you'd like to add? Keeping in mind, I usually have been saying this just to keep since our calls have been growing, just to keep our comments or questions focused, just to save time for everybody. But please, by all means, did I hear someone?
Yes, this is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Do religions, world religions, apply to all these paths, all these pathways?
Well, that's an interesting question. Because the Course says this is just one path of many. There is a universal curriculum. It says a universal theology is impossible, but a universal experience is not only possible but necessary, and that this is just one of many pathways. So I do think that when somebody's really, you know, like when you get to the core of the great religions, I mean, they're teaching love, and it's the, I've at least a very little I feel like I know, like, you know, about different religions, it seems that the more like mystical practices are more, are similar to the course. But I think any pathway, when we're feeling that deep connection and perhaps feeling prompted and moved through that, I think that can all lead us to awaken. And actually, we're going to read later in this section how, I'm going to read a sentence from later on, which we'll probably get to tonight. It says, how foolish and insane it is to think that there could be a road without, basically without God. I didn't, there's a couple other sentences I could have read. So in other words, all roads lead to him. So everything, you know, we're going to keep spinning our wheels down different pathways. The key is, like, not that you have to study the course. The key is that you're turning to something within, and that, you know, whatever the pathway it is, can lead to awakening. So I think, Cheryl, I think that those pathways absolutely can lead to awakening. But when they're used on behalf of the ego, you know, that's the key piece. Are they teaching fear? Are they teaching judgment? You know, what are they teaching? I feel like when there are these things that are sort of interwoven in there, those are more blocks to love. So there can be more stumbling blocks, which is why I've always really kind of resonated with the course, because it's just so consistent and clear. That's my two cents.
Can I add a little something to that?
Sure. Go for it.
I just want to add a little piece, which is, it's also and another way to look at it is whatever path I'm choosing, and as you say, all paths can lead to God. I think that's the point, is what is our intention on any given path? And also, is it to fulfill the small s self, or
yes,
God's purpose?
Yes. Thank you, Tanya. Well said. I completely agree with you. What is the purpose? Is it for the small s self or the capital S self, fulfilling God's purpose? That's perfect. Thank you. Is that enough, Cheryl?
I don't know that I agree.
You what?
I don't know that I agree.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that, you know, religions are man-made thought, you know, and they're not always divinely inspired. And there's a lot of extra rules and judgment and stuff that I think is designed to make people dependent and not understand their own connection with God. I don't know. Just, I've studied religion pretty much all my life, and I think a lot of it serves the ego.
And that's I was trying to speak to that. I don't know if that came through or not, but if it's being used by the ego, then it's gonna just, you're gonna be spinning your wheels. If it's something deeper, if it's being, you know, if it's your pathway that you're called to do and you're connecting with something beyond that small sense of self, you know, I'll just take your attention really quick to paragraph 10 of this same section. It says right here, there is no road that leads away from him. So the footnote says, the world's roads, which could be some religions and even aspects of some religions, the world's roads were built to lead away from God, but because we cannot actually leave him, they only produce an illusion of traveling away from him. So so we'll get to that paragraph. But I hear you. There's absolutely 100% a lot of ego in a lot of different pathways. But to just give you one example, there was a group member here who was coming for quite some time, and they're not coming anymore, but they said, you know, I don't see any difference between A Course in Miracles and the Bible. And I was like, really? And this person was like, nope, I don't see any difference at all. And she was like, I see through all the BS. Like, I'm not, you know, the things that have been kind of misused, misinterpreted, she's like, I've always known they weren't meant to be interpreted that way, or that, like, you know, a person transcribing this part of the Bible took it down through their own filter and so distorted the message. But some people can really tune in to, you know, something deeper than what the surface level words are saying. So just throwing that out there, too.
I think that the way that A Course in Miracles is the same is that the ego can use it
100%
others,
yep,
to attack. I
yep
mean, you see that in the group setting on Facebook where people are attacking each other, and they're all
yep
ACIM students.
Yep, yep, 100%.
So there's...
Yep, I agree. That's why I stay out of those groups. No need, no need. Anyway, let's read another paragraph. We're on paragraph number 7. Think not that happiness is ever reached by following a road away from it. This makes no sense and cannot be the way. To you who seem to find this course to be too difficult to learn, let me repeat that to achieve a goal, you must proceed in its direction, not away from it. And every road that goes the other way will not advance the purpose to be found. If this be difficult to understand, then is this course impossible to learn? But only then. For otherwise, it is a simple teaching in the obvious. So this is kind of logical. Think not that happiness is ever reached by following a road away from it. It speaks to, this is interesting, there's no little backstory here via a footnote or a footnote to see a cameo, but I imagine Helen and or Bill at some point had some feelings about the course being too difficult to learn. I feel like we've probably all had that thought at some point and that feeling. And Jesus says, let me repeat, that to achieve a goal, you must proceed in its direction, not away from it. So going in its direction of the course, of what the course is teaching, that means doing the lessons, actually doing them, not just reading them, not just doing it in your head, but actually doing what the lesson says. And, yeah, it's really quite achievable for us to learn this. I'll pause there. Any other comments or questions? We'll keep reading. There is a choice which you have power to make when you have seen the real alternatives. Until that point is reached, you have no choice. And you can but decide how you would choose the better to deceive yourself again. This course attempts to teach no more than that the power of decision cannot lie in choosing different forms of what is still the same illusion and the same mistake. All choices in the world depend on this. You choose between your brother and yourself, and you will gain as much as he will lose, and what you lose is what is given him. How utterly opposed to truth is this, when the lesson's purpose is to teach that what your brother loses, you have lost, and what he gains is what is given you. This is beautiful. I actually want to start with the latter part of this paragraph. So, actually, I guess mid-paragraph to the end. The world is constantly telling us that whatever you're choosing, you need to gain and it's always going to be at the expense of something. To gain something means somebody else loses, or if somebody else gains, it means that you could lose. And it says this is completely opposed to truth, because what the Course is teaching us is that what your brother loses, you have lost. So if your brother loses your blessing, you lose that blessing. If your brother loses your love, you're no longer aware of the love that's within you. Yet what he gains is what is given you. So as we give that love to our brother, that's what we come to know is also ours. The laws of giving and receiving that the world teaches do not, they're completely opposite for truth. Giving and receiving are one in truth, as the lesson says. And, you know, this also just speaks to me too, and I know I brought this up last week, and I think we got to keep talking about it, just everything happening in the world with race, and as I said last week, some of the pushback that I received from some people who feel that to talk about race or to do anything in the anti-racism realm is not Course-like. And I feel like what we've been reading about is speaking to the fact that, again, if we're trying to fix the world out there by our small selves, thinking that once that is fixed, then we'll all be saved, you know, nothing is going to work out where our salvation will be found in any of these things. However, when we're giving, again, I want to say my life, when I give my life over to Holy Spirit, which I do now consistently, I don't feel like I'm living my life for me anymore. You're given things to do. You're tapped on the shoulder. You're told, like, hey, you know, do this. Turn right. Take this on. And that's coming from a different place. And the way that I see, again, just everything happening with racism is that if my brother is in pain, I want to respond to that. And I feel like that's, again, the role of the miracle worker is to give love. And so that's just where I'm coming from, because this last sentence, the lesson's purpose is to teach you that what your brother loses, you have lost. What he gains is given you. So it's we need to give freedom is how we have it. Any comments or questions?
I love that, and thank you so much for saying that, Corinne. You're a great example.
Thank you,
that's inspiring.
Oh, thank you, thank you. It's honest. I feel tapped on the shoulder. I feel I don't feel like I'm living my life for myself anymore.
Get it. It's very exciting to me. It feels very empowering.
I want this for all of us because, you know, for so long, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect or there all the time or anything like that, but I get glimpses and I touch it, I feel like, every day, and this is just what we're searching for. Like, we're looking for God. We're always, always, always looking for God. When we think we have to search the world, fix something, you know, out there by our small self, find a better partner, whatever, we're looking for God. We're looking for God always. So if we can just pause and recognize that, that's a big turning point. Anybody else want to chime in? Ooh, we actually only have, I think, two paragraphs left. Pretty cool. Let me just see in the beginning of this paragraph if there's anything I want to say. There is a choice which you have power to make when you have seen the real alternatives. So basically, again, the alternative is between love and the ego, and we have a choice there. That is our true power of choice. But until we see that, until we see that it's love or the ego, we're going to be looking through the ego and seeing, like, choices. Love that we think is love, but it's not really love because it's of the ego's special love. Ego's idols, things like that, those aren't real choices. And we'll just keep deceiving ourselves and spinning our wheels until we come to the point, again, where we have an opportunity to choose between God and ego. Shall I read another paragraph, or does anybody want to chime in? We'll read another paragraph. He has not left his thoughts. So God has not left his thoughts. And remember that we are thoughts of God. He has not left his thoughts. But you forgot his presence and remembered not his love. No pathway in the world can lead to him, nor any worldly goal be one with his. What road in all the world will lead within, when every road was made to separate the journey and the purpose it must have, unless it be but futile wandering? All roads that lead away from what you are will lead you to confusion and despair. Yet has he never left his thoughts to die, without their source forever in themselves. He has not left his thoughts. I want to read that again, because remember, you are his thought. He has not left his thoughts. He could no more depart from them than they could keep him out. In unity with him do they abide, and in their oneness both are kept complete. Now, what was coming up for me in the beginning, actually, yeah, toward the beginning of this paragraph, was what Cheryl was saying earlier just about the world's religions. I feel like this describes it very clearly, that if it's a pathway in the world and isn't leading beyond the world, again, if it's tainted with judgment, fear, those different religions can perhaps keep us spinning our wheels for a little bit longer. So that just popped into my head as we were reading. But anyway, can we just stop and count how many times, I think it says three times he has not left his thoughts. That's the first sentence. Then it says sentence number six, yet has he never left his thoughts to die. And then sentence number seven, he has not left his thoughts. So if we are thoughts of God, and if you think about it, what's the course quote? Thoughts don't leave their source? Ideas do not leave their source. Ideas. We are ideas in the mind of God. We have not left our source. And I love how it says, he could no more depart from them than they could keep him out. So we are, like, I don't have language for how close to God we are, because we are literally his thought and his mind. It's like being a fish in the ocean with the water all around you. In unity with him do they abide, and in their oneness both are kept complete. So no matter what we do, we can't change this, and that's really good news. We can just distract ourselves from it for a little bit. We can futilely wander. We can engage in futile wandering, as it says. Again, anybody want to chime in? I feel like we're mostly absorbing things tonight, perhaps. But feel free to tune or to chime in if you feel moved. Let's go with paragraph number 10.
I have a question.
Go for it. Who's this?
My name is Catherine. I haven't actually said hello yet. But,
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I'm just started the course recently, and because of your book, actually. Thank you for that.
And, oh, cool.
I'm on number 43 or 42, and I'm really confused by it. And it's kind of on a similar line of what you just said, which is God is the mind of which I think. And I just don't get. I don't understand how I can both be, all my thoughts are of God, and yet somehow there's a me and a God, and there's separation. Like, how can you say that?
Right.
I don't get it.
I gotcha. Okay. I love your question. So first of all, with God is the mind with which I think, remember that we have surface-level thoughts, like the surface-level monkey mind thoughts that kind of occupy most of our mind most of the day. What do I have to do? What do I have to eat? Where do I have to go? Those are not our real thoughts, according to the Course. Those are, you know, just our small self thoughts that occupy our mind that are actually there to block out our real thoughts, which come from the mind of God, of which we are a part of. And those real thoughts are pure, blazing thoughts of love, like shining lights, luminous love. So there's a difference between the small self thoughts and like our real thought. Secondly, just what I'll speak to you about, like what you said about, like, you know, how can there be kind of separation and not separation, like if we're all one. So the Course is teaching us that as we're identified with these bodies, it's because we are wanting to be separate from God. We're wanting to experience separation. That's all a big lie. It's not possible. We are one with God, and we are also not these bodies. So in God, in the level of formlessness, so I'm not talking level of the world, talking level of formlessness, in that level, we are both, the Course says the sum exceeds the parts or something to that effect, meaning like God has all these thoughts that are distinct, and yet they're all part of the one mind of God. They're all one at the same time. It exceeds our ability to comprehend it. So if it makes your head spin a little, that's because it's like, I don't remember if I even referred to this in the book, but like, I know I referred to it in one of my blogs. I read a book once called Hyperspace, and the physicist was describing a two-dimensional worm. Like, if you think about like a flat piece of paper, and the worm can only exist in that plane of paper, it's not going to understand. If you punch a pencil through that paper, it's not going to understand up or down, because it's only going to see that little sliver of pen that fits within that plane of paper. That's how our minds, I think, are limited, that we can't wrap our heads around how we can be one and have somewhat of a distinction at the same time. Because I've come to feel, you know, in the Course it talks about the Son of God and the sons, plural, of God. And I've come to really feel that we're not one or the other, we're absolutely both. So we don't just, you know, disappear into oneness like some teachings say, but we are both one and distinct. So that part is a little bit beyond us. But does that help, Catherine?
It does. Thank you so much, Corinne.
Okay, good. Thanks for chiming in. Anybody else have a question or comment? If this is resonating, if you have any examples. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. So that last question of Catherine's brought up something, and you had mentioned this earlier, that, you know, recently more and more you've been feeling this connection that you're not just here for yourself, but here for a greater purpose. And for someone who's relatively new to the Course, as I am, I was wondering if your small self, as you continue to do the Course and align with the Holy Spirit, if that starts to fade a little bit. Because I think right now I feel very, very connected to it, and I would just wanted to see if anyone has had an experience or you have where it just kind of starts to fade away as you realize who you really are.
I love your question. And Amy Torres, who's another Course in Miracles teacher, she's a friend of mine, she once said, "My body is thinning away like the heel of a threadbare sock." And I love that. She says, "My body is thinning away like the heel of a threadbare sock." So absolutely, that small sense of self that we've had this like death grip on, you know, my identity is Corinne, it starts to loosen a little bit. You start to loosen that grip, and you start to have experiences that show you and teach you from an experiential level that you are something way greater than this small sense of self. I'm probably still identified with the small sense of self more than the capital S self on a daily basis. I don't exactly know, but it's definitely... I like the word fade that you picked, because it's not jolting. It's quite gentle. It's that gentle fading. So as we remember who we are, as we begin to remember who we are, just even beginning, we start to find that some of like that small self ego, those ego patterns, the things that used to trip us up, suddenly just aren't bothering us anymore. They're just kind of falling away. And I've shared that on the call before, like my fear of flying. One day I just was like, hey, something's missing, when I was like getting on an airplane. And I was like, oh, I'm not anxious. And Paula has a great story about smoking for, Paula, how many years, I know you're on mute, how many years were you smoking before it just fell away?
Oh, my God.
A long time.
Like I was maybe 48. I had been smoking since I was about 15 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a long
and it just,
time.
Like, it just fell away for you, right? Like
it fell away because every time I lit a cigarette, I no longer tried to resist it. And I would just say, Holy Spirit, look, I can't do this. Get it off me. Take it from me. And I wound up with like a bronchitis situation. So for about 2 weeks, I was working, I was doing everything, I was functioning, but I was not feeling well and certainly did not want to smoke because of the bronchitis.
Mm-hmm.
When that passed, it was gone.
Ah, that's awesome.
It was gone. It was as if I had never smoked.
Wow.
And I'm not kidding. It was as if I had never lit a cigarette. And
wow.
I have never had any desire from that moment to do that.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I feel like
that's how it works.
When she was talking, I'm finding I am experiencing guidance sort of effortlessly. If I have a question that I take to the Holy Spirit, I swear, it comes, I mean, the answer is like, will be right in front of me. I mean, it just doesn't take any time anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it unfolds sometimes in just the most lovely ways.
That's awesome, Paula. That's really, really awesome to hear. And that's why I love coming together in this group and sharing, because we all learn from each other. It reinforces learning in our own mind. When I hear your stories, everybody on the call, it helps me. It helps me, you know, strengthen my choice for the Holy Spirit. And so, Courtney, like, I hope that Paula's example and, you know, my example with, like, the flying falling away, like, speaks to the fact that things do just, they fade. And I love your word choice with picking the word fade.
Yeah,
and
thank you guys so much for sharing. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, that helped. Do you have any follow-up questions?
Yeah.
Or did that
No, I
it?
Do. I just think those two very concrete examples are very helpful. Something I'm struggling right now is around food and diet and exercise. And I have noticed over the past few days that just less attached to that. So your two examples are really helpful.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Thank you,
Courtney. You know, I'll throw in there too, and I always speak about this also, is that we have to be where we are. If we're intellectually trying to force ourselves to get somewhere, we're going to feel strain. It's going to, you know, feel like quite an effort. And this, I don't want to say it's effortless because we're making an effort to choose to turn to Holy Spirit, but there's an effortlessness that kicks in at some point where, again, we're learning through experience and not just through intellect. So my way has been to be where I am, let myself, if I'm struggling with whatever, acknowledging it, accepting it, being with it, asking the Holy Spirit for help, asking for the Holy Spirit, you know, to look at it with me, and moving through it, then that's when the experiential learning comes in. So thank you, Courtney. Anybody else? Love these questions. We have one paragraph left. Let's do it. There is no road that leads away from him. There is no road that leads away from him. A journey from yourself does not exist. So this is kind of, I'm just pausing here for a moment. This is just kind of speaking that, like, we have to remember that when we feel like, oh, you know, I have so much healing to do, there's so much before me, I'm getting so distracted by X, Y, or Z, I've strayed from my path again, might be another ego thought. This is telling us, hey, remember, you haven't left God. You're safe and you're healed and you're home right now. So there is no road that leads away from Him. A journey from yourself does not exist. How foolish and insane it is to think that there could be a road with such an aim. Where could it go? And how could you be made to travel on it, walking there, without your own reality at one with you? Forgive yourself your madness and forget all senseless journeys and all goalless aims. They have no meaning. You cannot escape from what you are, for God is merciful and did not let His Son abandon Him. For what He is, be thankful, for in that is your escape from madness and from death. Nowhere but where He is can you be found. There is no path that does not lead to Him. I love how it's repeating the same sentences within these paragraphs. We start with a sentence, there is no road that leads away from Him, and then we end with, there is no path that does not lead to Him. So no matter where it is that we think we are, if we have those thoughts, if one of those biggest ego trippy thoughts is to say, I have regressed. I'm not where I should be. I'm going so slow. You know, everybody else is getting it but me. And we have to remember that we are exactly where we need to be on our journey and that we are safe and healed and home and our perfect innocence is within us right now, just waiting for us to recognize it and to receive it. So it's there already. I love this. Anybody want to add anything?
Yes, Laurel here.
Hi, Laurel.
Hello. I began on a spiritual path when I was 18. Mostly because I was in a lot of emotional pain and suffering. And so for my entire adult life, I was, immersed in my own spiritual path, sometimes with other people. It was before the Course. And I really felt like I was doing all of this spiritual work, but nothing was changing in my mind and in my life that I could see. And it was a source of great despair. And when I came to the Course, which was then maybe 50 years later after I had started on my spiritual path, things all fell together in a very, very quickly. And I realized that everything that I had done for 50 years, even though I couldn't see anything changing, I couldn't feel that anything was changing, all these steps that I was taking, I really was moving forward. Everything, every spiritual thought I had, every attempt to connect with Spirit, they all helped. And when it finally, something clicked for me and I was really finally able to connect, I could look back and go, oh, it was always perfect exactly where I was. And now I can see in my life, what I find so beautiful is that I can actually see reflections back to me that I'm making progress. I can see that I'm, you know, like that I'm feeling better, that I'm attracting people into my life, you know, that are happier, more joyful people, you know, that I have more sense of just trust and faith. I mean, I see these things now that are giving me kind of these instant feedbacks, so to speak, that I am exactly where I need to be. But those many years, I'm just so grateful that in my hope, I felt so hopeless, but I obviously wasn't totally hopeless because I did keep going.
Right. Oh, Laurel, go on.
I know that spirit was there, even though I could not sense it or feel that.
Right. I love what you just shared, and I'm so glad that you shared it. All things work together for good, and mm-hmm. what you just spoke to, like the fact that for so long you couldn't see any progress, but then, first of all, A Course in Miracles is here to save us time, right? So we are now learning within one lifetime what we previously would have learned throughout many lifetimes. And the Course even says something to that effect somewhere. Perfect example of that was just like within a week, I was called to speak about how the body doesn't have to die. And then a week later, I was writing about how, you know, with my open letter, like, you know, looking at unexamined racism, which seemed like two totally different things, and it just felt like, oh, celestial speed up, like, you know, bring it on. What you just spoke to is so important for all of us to remember, because it might seem like we're getting distracted or going down a path, and of course we always want to check in if we're not feeling peaceful. You know, you were led to A Course in Miracles because there was something in you that was ready and still searching. I just want to share a quick example to build on what you just said with the same exact theme of how everything works together, because I used to have horrible, horrible, debilitating public speaking anxiety. I almost did not go to the college that I went to because we had to take two semesters, not just one, but two semesters of public speaking. And I was like, that's it, I'm not going there. I did, but my knees would shake, like I'd be sweating, my voice would be visibly, you know, shaking. And so when I first started teaching at the college where I got my master's from, in the beginning I was over preparing because I was so nervous. If somebody asked me a question that I didn't know how to answer, you know, I had to be ready. I didn't write out everything I was going to say, but it was pretty darn close. That prepared me. Eventually, doing that again and again and again, I got comfortable with it. And I didn't need to rely on notes so much. Then I got a job, and this is kind of simultaneous with, you know, teaching the course, but with the teaching job that I was doing at Bank of America, teaching mindfulness meditation, in the beginning, I was like scripting out everything I was going to say. I had a whole plan every single week of what meditation we were going to do, what poem I was going to read. That fell away to the point where then I could just show up totally without a plan and have like a beautiful meditation when I stepped out of the way and I just let it come through me. Then I was able to start seeing that happen with the study group, because when we started this study group 8 years ago or whatever, I was terrified, like so nervous in the beginning. And I'd write down everything we were going to say, all the points I was going to make. And then that eventually fell away, and here I am now, and I read what we're going to read ahead of time, but I don't do, you know, I don't, like, research things necessarily or do any kind of, like, planning of what I'm going to share. So if something occurs to me, I might jot it down in the margin of the book. My point being, I just wanted to share that to really build on what you just said, the importance of what you just said, because we might think we're not making progress, but everything that you're in right now is for your growth and your learning, and it's leading you, you know, I almost think of like in career counseling terms, like transferable skills or learning skills, mm-hmm. like me learning how to speak up to my dad and not be afraid of being attacked definitely helped me write that open letter, because then when people were, you know, giving pushback, I was like, yeah, somebody doesn't agree, great, you know, and not upset about it. So you're absolutely right, and I'm so glad you just shared what you shared, because I feel like it helps us all, and it's just a really great reminder that no matter where we are, it is absolutely perfect for our learning. God is with us. Holy Spirit is with us. We have our you know, small part to do, but the script is written in the good sense that we have not left home. We're still safe and whole and healed, and that's how it's always going to be. So I love that, Laurel. Thank you. And thank you for indulging me and letting me share, because that just got me very excited.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody want to add to that? Ask a question? We have like 3 minutes left.
This is Faden.
Hi, Faden.
This last paragraph, paragraph 10, I just feel such a comfort from reading it. I know some parts of the course just has my brain synapses arcing and saying, say what? And so I need to have these portions, because there are other places throughout the text too and the lessons where I feel comfort. But this especially, I just found it very comforting. And I especially like the forgive yourself your madness.
Mm. I am so glad you said that. That stood out to me too.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of, in a sense, also speaking to what we were just talking about, that like no matter what it is that we're going through, no matter whatever we were going through, it's all for the giving to the Holy Spirit, and recognizing that all of it has no meaning. With the ego, it can be repurposed to help us wake up. Thank you for sharing. I agree with you. This is a very clear and comforting paragraph. Thank you. Anybody else want to chime in for our last minute together for the week?
Hi, Karen. It's John.
Oh, hi, John.
Sure. I'll chime in. I know I'm kind of busy. But, I feel the same way that I notice, especially with my blind and her dimension stuff, I've noticed that when I've let go and turned into the spirit, that life gets so much easier. Which is, things work out, and maybe when they don't work out, I just let them go, too. It's like, okay, well, that's the way it's going to be. It's like, you win this time. Jackson was going to get us last week, and it was just totally uncooperative, and, they did the topical on her, and then we were going to give her a shot, and she was like, not having any of it, and it's like her last cavity.
I'm sorry. The line's a little garbled. If you could just speak a little bit more slowly. What about a shot?
She was going to the dentist last week to get her final cavity taken care of. She had like 10 the surface ones, nothing really bad. They had to drill or anything. But she'd been really good with all of them. She took the Valium beforehand and get them be kind of loopy, but in a good mood. This last time she went, they put the topical on her, to numb it a little bit first before the shot. And when we had to give her a shot, she was just like, nope, I'm not doing it. And he tried to explain things. And he was like, okay, well, you win this time.
Right.
We just have to let things go sometimes. And they don't seem to be going our way and realize that, it's just part of our lessons in life. And,
we're going to
let go and let God, do it in his own time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's such wisdom in that saying, let go and let God. Or are we going to hold on to a, tight grip of how we think it should be, and then when we're holding on to how we think it should be, when it doesn't match that, we suffer. So instead, just allowing things to be as they are, whether they seem quote-unquote good or quote-unquote bad or challenging, always, whether things are showing up that seem to be good or seem to be challenging, it's all for the giving to the Holy Spirit. We don't just give the bad. We give it all. And that way, we're repurposing everything that the ego has made to help us awaken. Thank you for that, John.
Thank you.
Woohoo! Well, we're at the top of our time together for this week. So earmark your book. We'll be starting with the concept of the self next week, which sounds exciting. So, yay. I love you all. And have a great week. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Love you.
Love you, too. Bye. Thank you.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, Corinne.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.